morning and welcome. Now, we've read the original submission that you lodged, so thank you for lodging that, and you don't need to reread that out to us because we've read that. But you're very welcome to speak to that submission and highlight key points for us.
Just give me these photos that we can speak to.
Thank you.
It's just one copy, and it's just some photos that I just quickly printed off that you may want to refer to just to make things a bit clearer. So I'm Denise, and this is James Anderson. Our home is at Awatere, which is a 3,000 hectare extensive pastoral sheep property. We're just located 8 kilometres east of Waikar.
Yep.
It's been developed and farmed over the last 100 years, and the ability for us to be able to continue to farm this land is paramount as we look towards the future. The name Awatere, which is their property name, means gentle flowing streams. So it comprises of 2,000 hectares of uncultivated hillblocks, native bush, and 1,000 hectares of ridgetop cultivated paddocks, which gives rise to about an effective area of 2,500 hectares. We run an extensive operation of approximately 18,000 stock units, which is made up of both sheep and beef, and with the average stocking rate of approximately 6 stock units per hectare on the effective hectares, and our altitude ranges from 300 metres to 800 metres above sea level. We endeavour to try and fatten everything, of which 30% of our stock are Hereford Angus beef cattle, made up of breeding cows, calves, and rising 2-year-old heifers and bulls. The role of the cow on Awatere is not only for breeding, but they're also used as a pasture management tool. This is important to us for eating the roughage, including young weeds, and this also complements our sheep operation. Both the eastern and western aspects of our place have numerous streams which flow into large fenced off red tussock areas, and we feel this acts as a natural wetland and a filtration system prior to discharging into the main water bodies. We believe these fenced off areas are a significant contributor to the good water quality within our property, and this is reflected in the comments that we receive from numerous hunters, fishermen and tourists who regularly visit our property for recreational purposes. Over the years, our property has been farmed and developed. All the subdivision fences have been carefully placed according to the topography, and also to provide natural stock water with creeks and streams. A lot of our cultivated paddocks, we have up to 5 creeks flowing through them. So the priority with the cultivation also over these years has also been to eradicate gorse and broom, and this has been the aftermath of years of gold mining back in the start of the century. Gorse and broom and barberry is an ongoing issue for us, and we use both livestock as a tool to help eradicate this, as well as an annual spray program to try and keep the weeds suppressed. This statement has been prepared in relation to the submission that I drew the short straw and put in. So overall, we support the underlying intent of the proposed plan, specifically with the provisions relating to the implementation of water quality. However, as outlined in our submission and in this evidence, we do not believe that all the proposed rules and policies will result and achieving an outcome of maintained or improved water quality, as many of the proposed rules in our instance are impractical, particularly when applied to extensive pastoral farming. In fact, some of these requirements will result in us no longer being able to farm the land in an economic manner, which in turn compromises our ability to be good custodians of the land. The matters which I specifically would like to speak to, the main emphasis we're going to talk about is on stock exclusion. We're also going to cover, and as well as critical source areas, we'll touch on the cultivation rules in Rule 25 and also the lack of supporting information on the economic impacts of this proposal. So firstly, on the stock exclusion, we understand that the intent of Rule 70 is to reduce the effects of the stock in the waterways on extensive pastoral farming such as Awatiri. This rule, as currently drafted, presents significant challenges to us, including the economic costs provided with if we use fencing as an exclusion, and also as well as providing an alternative reticulated water system. Stock management will also be an issue with the movement of these fences around these fences as well as through critical source areas. Another cost would be to the aesthetics, we feel, with the southern landscape with the myriad of bulldozed fence lines across it. The photos we have attached, like the top photo that you have got there, it shows the nature of our Awatiri, which is dissected with many gullies and small waterways, so which means to comply with Rule 70 would severely compromise our ability to livestock farm. To get a handle on this, we've been working with Environment Southland to carry out a focus activity plan for us. Unfortunately, these maps weren't, I do apologise, they've only just come to complete it, so we weren't able to submit the maps to you before mid-May. I have attached the maps there for your reference. The Environment Southland staff did make comment on the complexity and the challenges that we have with the undulating terrain that we've got. So have given a mapped indication on our cultivated paddocks only. You'll see this on the top map that you have got there. On it, it displays our critical source areas as well as all our waterways. So that's probably something that you might like to make reference to. For us to implement this exclusion policy based on the mapping program, the map that they have provided us with, we'd be looking to install on the mapped area alone over 66 kilometres of fencing on 33 kilometres of waterway. The average cost of $16 per metre, depending on the underlying topography and whether or not the fences we have to put bulldozed lines in. This also represents, this comes to approximate cost just on our cultivated paddocks alone of $1,056,000. And you multiply this over the Waikai catchment area alone, this could be a concern. In addition to the cost of fencing of our waterways, we will also need to install a reticulated drinking water system, as the stock will no longer be able to access the waterways, the streams and the gullies for water purposes. We've received an estimate from Waterforce, and this comes to just for our paddocks alone for up to $400,000 for a simple gravity-fed reticulated water system. Furthermore, this is more costs that we're going to have to try and absorb into our farming business. James and I are also concerned about the potential issues associated with weed management, which give rise to stock exclusion from by way of fencing. As highlighted in points 6 to 9, weeds are a significant issue for us, and the inability to be able to use stock for weed control spread, we may need to undertake more spraying. So with our topography, and if these waterways have been fenced off, this could result in an increased cost by using helicopter. We also wish to make comments with respect to the Clean Water 90% River and Lakes Swimmable document by 2040, which I've enclosed a copy there. I'm going to be making reference to, this one here. I've put a copy in there for you. I'm aware that this was published by the Ministry for Environment in February this year, but if adopted, will result in national changes to the policy statement for fresh water. It would, in our opinion, seem that the matters raised in this document here would, in many instances, and particularly with reference to the stock exclusion policies, be contrary to the Southland proposed water and land plan.
I might just pop in there. We're aware of that document, and the officers have made recommendations to us on the submissions that have been received. And they've recommended to us at this stage changing Rule 70 so it aligns with those national regulations, which are set out in the document that you've got there.
That's exactly just about the wording of
the document. I know, I'm just reminding you. So that's what they've recommended that we do, that we just align this plan with those national regulations. and we're obliged to do that anyway. So when government releases its final regulations, because the one you've got in front of you is a draft set of regulations, we understand government's going to release the final regulations prior to the election. And then this regional plan will be obliged to pretty much fall in line with those regulations. And the rule in the plan can't be more lenient than those regulations. It can only be stricter than them. But it's highly likely that the officers will just recommend to us that we just pretty much adopt those national regulations. So if you think the national regulations solve some of the problems of concern to you, then you can rest assured that when those final regulations come out, this plan will pretty much follow what they say.
Because currently it's quite impeding me around. At least I think that's something that I have touched on in here, is they've differentiated between dairy cows on a milking platform to dry stock to that's beef cattle. So at least they've recognised their different grazing regimes.
Have you seen what's called the Section 42A report?
Yeah.
So that's where they recommended that Rule 70 be changed to align with those regulations.
We've only just become aware of that.
So
I mean, we're in favour of the methodologies outlined in the Clean Water document, but ask that, since we have come in, that you do consider Rule 70 and Policy 18.1 to align with matters that are adopted at national level. And we also favour in this is the graduated timelines for compliance requirements, which is probably on a property like ours a lot more workable.
Yep, and the staff have recommended those timeframes to us as well, 2025 and 2020.
Right. So basically that was just what I was going to read. One thing in this document that they also reiterate is the water bodies. They've got a clear definition of that. Where i.e. waterways is rivers, streams and drains that are permanently flowing, and where the active channel is over a metre wide at this point. And I do refer to that S42 on page 310. But under the dairy accord of a water body, it's not only it's a metre wide but 30 centimetres deep, which isn't in here, which runs for 6 months of the year. So then I did refer to the independent end of the Commission's report on this as well on page 549. So also referring to stock exclusion and submission and others, we, along with others, reading the other people's submissions with properties similar to ourselves, there had been a stocking rate per hectare. The Commission's analysis of this is basically acknowledged the impact to us, but rejected the stock unit basis based on the complexity of administering the stocking rate provision. So this just reiterates how important this adopting this policy would be.
I understand that.
So moving on to the next one, cultivation. In our submission, we raised concerns about 25B, which requires the cultivation not take place more than once in a five-year period. We request that the rule be amended as follows, that cultivation does not take place more than once in a five-year period, except where an area of crop is planted and is returned to pasture within a 12-month period, in which case cultivation would occur twice in a 12-month period. We do not believe that this change will result in any greater adverse effects to the environment, and it enables a normal farming practice to occur. Economic and social considerations of the effects of the plan, we feel there's been a generic standards imposed on us, and basically there's some overbearing regulation and bureaucracy. The freshwater plan here strongly suggests that regional councils consider the rural community's economic well-being when making these decisions. Having received no formal testing results of our three major creek flows which flow from our property, we don't know to what extent that we're contributing to the degradation of these waterways. If there was better data available, this would help us to prioritise. James and I feel that it's imperative that the economic and environmental aspects be evaluated in depth before we proceed to implement this plan. So what we recommend for adoption is, well, firstly, we thank you for listening to as submission, and we ask that you consider making amendments to this water plan here and look at adopting this. This clean water, 90% rivers and lakes swimmable document. Also a clear definition of a waterway be adopted within this, but also to include a depth of 30 centimetres as well. at any point and runs for over 6 months of the year. Anything less than this could be classified as a critical source area. And rule 25, we ask that you make provision for cultivation to occur as a permitted activity where you are going to crop, to going from crop rotation within a 12-month period, and adopt the wording that we've set up in number 27. So Jane is just going to talk here a little bit on the photos that I've got there and just the top few maps.
Well, firstly, the top map of the Environment South and Land Management team have done for us. If you put your thumb right in the middle, you'll see some airstrips. That's the top of our property. Our property is like a bowler hat, and it runs off onto the sides. All the orange is critical source areas. At the present, we would have 12 to 14,000 stock units in those critical source areas at this moment. The way it is written in the plan of managing stock in critical source areas and this type of hill country for us through the winter or any period of time is actually we can't do it. I've just got to state that there's no way we can fence or actually manage that. It's too difficult, and actually if you wanted to go to the purest point of how everything's written, we would have to destock completely. So the critical source to be managed, and when you look at the extent of what we're facing, I have to raise the question is, you tell us how we continue, rather than us trying to find a way to continue.
And this map doesn't actually include stock hats, which apparently is classified as a critical source area as well. They weren't able to put everything onto this map.
The blue lines on the outside, we feel we can deal with quite a lot of them, because that's most of our cultivation. But it, within that, you'll see the blue going into orange lines. That is gullies that are outside the 16 degree or greater than 16 degrees within cultivated areas, and it runs in and out, in and out.
And you'll see that on the bottom right hand photo there of what we're faced with the 16 degree rule, and then on the other side it might only be 5 degrees.
And then the photo, in the middle photo there, we've got a boundary photo which is the winding creek. It's not to slag neighbours, it is ownership of that is, as you know, Lynn's Dock, neighbouring properties. We have kept our waterways clean. We have fishermen. There is no way fishermen can actually work in the broom in the winding creek. So they actually have to walk in the river. They can't actually fish off the side. Now, we believe that there is nothing to stop farming people actually using weeds to be part of this plan to keep stock out of the waterways. And so we've fought weeds for 25 years, and my father-in-law before that another 18 years to clear this property. And if you want aesthetics over Southland, you've got to actually consider the weed issue. And it's Darwin's Barberry, Gorse and Broome for us. And most of the Waikai area is that they're the main weeds. The current rule with the Environment South on regarding weeds is that on rural properties is that you have to keep your weeds 10 metres off rivers and fence lines of your neighbours, and that's it. That's the rural one. Urban is different.
But talking of exclusion, getting rid of our beef cows is not an option, because it's such an important management tool for us. And if we didn't want to be faced with this, with the money, with the capital expenditure, even if we were to exclude beef cows, we still have a loss. We can't replace that with sheep because of the type of grazing that they do with the roughage.
That's the combined effort of cattle with sheep. So,
Anything else? I think I've got any questions. Okay, thank you very much for that. We'll see if we have any questions.
Thank you. I see you say trees go up to, about 750 metres above sea level?
The top is 840 actually, but yes, we do.
2,500 feet, so whatever that converts.
3,000 feet.
Okay, so what, do you do any conservation of the kite over 700?
No.
So you wouldn't, is that, why is that?
Why? We've never considered cultivating that high because nothing will grow up there. When you get to about 2 to 2.2 down at our latitude, you're starting to push the economics of actually trying to get ryegrass and all English pastures established within the short period of growing. And there's snow up there at the moment, so.
And the aspect to the south as well.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry?
It's a southerly aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning. I'm just clarifying these materials. They're part of the uncompleted farm focus or farm metro plan that you're developing with Environment South.
This is the, yes, we've been working with Environment South, and I'd have to go back. We were working with Environment South 5 to 6 years ago on actually trying to adopt a hill and high country on bringing this together, but unfortunately it all stopped. We weren't, we just stopped being asked to contribute. We got left out, I think, because of the complexity.
I can certainly see the complexity, it's very clear. I just wanted to understand the status or the stage that
you're
planning was at.
Well, we're starting to plan now, and we actually have got a farm management plan in action going forward. So we've done this early so that we knew what we were dealing with, so we could bring something here. It was pointless coming here, we felt, without this.
Yes, this is very graphic.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm interested in your definition of waterway. And do you think that stocking rate should also be part of the determination of what is a waterway that needs to be fenced?
We were looking at the other submissions, and I'll give reference to Mount Nicholas. And what they're faced with, and it is trying to keep all cattle out of all waterways for us is impossible. Even under 16 degrees, as we've just shown you, it raises big challenges. So to try and get some sort of resolve in it, a stocking rate thing could have worked in an extensive area. It's hitting upon the amount of stock in that particular area, which was we thought would have been a stock unit per hectare, unders and overs.
But they had it to a Mount Nicholas was suggesting that you based it on your maximum stocking rate for the year, over the year. So like, you know, the summertime could be your peak stocking rate, and you might have, like in our instance, we may be up to 24,000 stock units when we put all our lambs on board and all our calves on board before they all go away. So whether or not it's based on that, or whether you consider altitude to come into it as well, because generally people that are more extensively stocked are at a higher altitude because the growing period's a lot less. I think we need perhaps strategic fencing in problematic areas, you know, recognising those areas. There needs to probably be a compromise and a happy medium met, and whereas I think this plan here is most of the way to it. And this is where the river depth comes into it, and that's quite
important. Our hands may be somewhat tied in this matter anyway, but anyway, thank you.
Yeah, just clarification. You mentioned about Rule 25 and a rotation for cropping, but you didn't mention area.
Oh.
There's been submissions on area and kind of a comment about the 50 hectares. And I was just wondering how that affected you and your enterprise.
We farm a little bit outside the norm of Southland Square. We have been traditionally, up until a few years ago, all grass farming. And even till last year, our amount of winter grazing area was under 50 hectares, or just on, for the stock units carried on the property, this is not the norm. This year we've adopted to reduce that area by half, and all grassing our calves going through the winter in a spread fashion over a large area, and it's basically to see what our growth rates were and if we can actually do this. So that we have actually trying to go back to our all grass wintering policies that we had years ago. So, but I must stress that is not the norm, as you know.
I think you need to probably bring around to maybe perhaps consider a percentage of their farm, perhaps a workable percentage, and anything over and above you have to get consent.
Thank you.
There's one matter I wanted to ask you about relating to the original submission that you made on Rule 25, and you've addressed it in your notes to us today. But in your submission, you asked us to amend the rule to allow cropping twice in the paddock within 1 year. I see in your submission you're using the word 12 months, but if I go back to what you put in the original submission, the question I had, would that be a calendar year or a financial year? Which would be?
Well, if you've got a winter crop in, and under you're recultivating to put back into grass, if you can't do it within 1 year, you're going to have black ground until you get to the... I know, but you're working within your growing season, aren't you? And if you took it from a financial year, 1st of June, you would have your crop being fed off after the 1st of June, and then you'd have to put it back into grass.
So would it be best if we were to adopt your submission and use the word year, would calendar year be better?
I suppose I you work those two counties out.
It's just that whenever a rule or a provision uses the word year, people say, well, what does that mean? Does it mean a year or
12 months, I don't know. Within a 12-month period.
Within a 12-month period.
Yeah, I know that keeps it in your notes to us. Okay, thank you very much for that.
I was just wondering, Mr. Chairman, would it be helpful, could you explain what, because this is quite an interesting, because it goes round and round, could you explain when you would take out of grass to go into crop and when you would go from crop back into the next sowing?
Taking out.
Because I think that helps clarify the Chairman's comments, because depending on what the criteria is, sometimes that period is actually longer than 12 months.
Yes, so it is.
Could you just explain that a little bit? It would help the panel.
Well, I suppose if you're looking at 12 months, it would be taking out or spraying out for cultivation in that November period for Swedes, or if you do set up the Swede thing in early December. And that would be in October, we would be working that to be put under grass and... For what I do anyway, that would be regrassed before Labour weekend, which is in October, so you're actually within 11 months of that period of time.
Provided you can get on to re-salt.
Just weather dependent.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. Thank you very much for coming in, and thanks for preparing the very detailed submission and the speaking notes. So you had them in the information you provided to us, so I've had them copied for each of the panel members. And these photographs, do you need them back? Or
can no, that's for you to keep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next submitter on my list is Jules Adams.